You are listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Good afternoon. Alaskans can now apply for their 2024 permanent fund dividends after the filing period opened on Monday. Eligible Alaskans can apply online at pfd.alaska.gov. Paper applications can also be downloaded and are available at distribution centers statewide. To qualify, you must have been an Alaska resident for all of calendar year 2023. You can't have been imprisoned or sentenced on felony charges during the year, and leaving Alaska for 180 days or more will also disqualify you for this year's PFD. How much Alaskans will receive this year is still up in the air. Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposed budget for the year would pay out more than $3,000 to qualified residents, following a decades-old formula and state statute. However, the Alaska legislature hasn't followed that formula since 2016, while trying to balance paying out PFDs with paying for state services, and the 2024 dividend amount will likely again be less than the governor's proposal. Alaskans have until March 31st at midnight to file for this year's PFD. Last year's payout was $1,312. Alaska's 2023 cruise ship season broke records. Juneau, the state's capital, saw more than 1.5 million cruise ship passengers total. Citywide records were also broken in other southeast towns popular with visitors, like Sitka, Ketchikan, and Skagway. But 1,200 miles west of Juneau, a small team worked to beat Unalaska's record of only 18 ships in a season. For Coast Alaska's Tourism Today series, KUCB's Andy Lusk reports.
What comes to mind when you hear Unalaska Dutch Harbor?
Desolate.
Remote.
Cold.
And harsh.
Hard life. Tough people.
And it's a real working environment, I guess.
Unalaska is so well known for commercial fishing that many visitors mistakenly call it by the name of its fishing port, Dutch Harbor. The first thing you see when you step off of a cruise ship in Unalaska is heavy industry. There's towers of crab pots and shipping containers, a gantry crane, semi-trucks rumbling by, and an army of workers keeping it all in motion. Industry is also the first thing you smell. Fish oil lingers in the air during processing days, and the scent of burning shipping pallets wafts through residential areas. Unalaska has about 4,500 residents and a rough reputation. It's isolated, harsh, and expensive to get to. It's a place for crabbers to get into bar fights, not the first place many people think of for a nice vacation.
I'm going to point out a few mountains for you. Straight ahead.
Catherine McGlashan wants to change that. She runs the Unalaska Visitors Bureau.
I think my vision stepping in was to promote more of our Unangan culture. So I try to speak more of our culture and what we do to promote it and keep it alive. So
McGlashan grew up here, and she wants people to appreciate the magic of this place. To her, it's more than just the town from the popular reality show Deadliest Catch. There's really no tourism infrastructure to speak of in Unalaska. Visitors disembark at the same dock as the big barges and pollock trawlers. Today, a handful of tourists from Viking Cruises Orion wander around outside of a giant fish refrigeration plant and then board a school bus driven by a local volunteer.
When they first get on, it's a school bus, so they really... They're like, a school bus? Really? And I'm like, we're a small town of 4,500 people. You know, we utilize everything that we can.
On the tour bus, it's wildlife that gets the biggest oohs and ahs.
Oh, yeah. To your left, you'll see a fox and a couple eagles down there.
Oh, wow.
Dieter Pazivio is from Bremen, Germany. He says Unalaska wildlife is unlike anything he sees back home, even in his harbor town.
You know, because as we came in, there are lots of whales, sea lions, sea otters, well, all this stuff you don't find over in Europe.
Jörg Meyer is from Germany as well. He describes Unalaska as, quote, more cultural than expected.
It's a good contrast to those who live in big cities. Hear the nature, hear the wind.
But culture goes far beyond natural beauty. Unalaska history is Ununga history, and visitors often don't know much about the island's Alaska Native population. While giving guided tours of the island, Catherine McGlashan emphasizes Ununga life.
I kind of always held on to the culture because my mom was very,
she was very passionate about our culture and community. So we always ate native dishes, and she would invite her friends and family. And when elders would come over, they would speak the language. So it's pretty precious now, because you don't ever see that happening anymore.
This bus wants more than just the regular tour. The visitors are curious about Ununga history, and they want to know about McGlashan herself.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
You want to hear about me?
Yeah.
So my great-grandfather came from Scotland, and my great-grandmother was from Attu, which was the last island out on the Aleutian chain.
McGlashan says these moments are rare, and it took her by surprise.
I was kind of thrown off that they wanted to learn more about the Unangan culture. Yeah, it was pretty neat just to describe to them a little bit about the tattooing and my Unangan name.
McGlashan only has one other employee at the Unalaska Visitors Bureau, Trevana McGowan. A handful of locals volunteer with them on the dozen or so days when a cruise ship is in town. This year, the small tourist team broke the town's record for visiting cruise ships. There were 20. That's two more than the year before the pandemic. But McGlashan and McGowan are doing more than breaking number records. They also leave visitors with a raw, intimate picture of what life can be in one of Alaska's farthest-flung corners.
So I had a guy on one of the earlier cruise ships, and he told me, "What you have here is very special. We're going to Juneau. Juneau will get, 10,000 people off of three different cruise ships at a time." And one of the things that stuck with me was that he said, "I'm probably never going to remember a single person in Juneau, but I'm never going to forget this conversation I'm having with you right here."
Now, when you hear Unalaska Dutch Harbor, what comes to mind?
Fascinating island.
Historic.
Fabulous.
Great little town.
In Unalaska, I'm Andy Lusk.
Amazing. Just an amazing spot.
The tribe of the village of Holy Cross near the Yukon River has won a $1.2 million federal grant to organize a multi-tribe ancestral homelands conservation district across a wide swath of Alaska, from the Bering Sea to the central interior. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, the lands in question were set aside in 1971 for 90 days. But 52 years later, their fate remains undecided.
The proposal goes by a long name: the First Indigenous Sovereign Habitat Tribal Conservation District Mountains to Sea, Alaska. Holy Cross Tribal Chief Eugene Paul says the 38 tribes that make up the new Bering Sea Interior Tribal Commission are seeking co-management agreements with the Bureau of Land Management and other federal agencies.
We want to be at the table and making those decisions that would impact our villages.
The co-management initiative is an attempt by tribes in the area to gain more say over some of the millions of acres of federal land that were set aside under Section D-1 of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. These so-called D-1 withdrawals were meant to last 90 days so that the federal government could decide what to do with them. But they've been in land use limbo ever since. The Trump administration tried to revoke the D-1 withdrawals. Holy Cross and other partner tribes asked the BLM for additional protection. The Biden administration is collecting public comments about whether to lift the D-1 status, which could open the area to potential mining. More than 13 million acres of D-1 land are in the Bering Sea Western Interior Area. Chief Paul says the Bering Sea Interior Tribal Commission wants to co-manage some of the land and resources in the area, particularly in watersheds and other zones important for subsistence hunting, fishing, and berry picking.
We wanted these sections of lands around our community, because we're really close to BLM land. I could step out my back door and step right on BLM land.
Paul says he's particularly concerned that the land might be open to mining or other extractive industries. The Alaska Outdoor Council, a sportsman's organization, has raised objections to the tribal co-management proposal. It's leery of tribal management of public resources. In a blog post, Outdoor Council Policy Director Rod Arno says fish and game management belongs to the state, and he wonders where the co-management arrangement leaves non-tribal members. The governor's office and media contacts at state agencies did not respond to emails on the subject. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is KTOO.